Welcome to the free version of Sunday night's main event. Remember, this show is crowdfunded. So if you like what you hear, please subscribe to our Patreon. It's only $4 a month. That's only $1 a week. And not only do you get a commercial-free and extended version of this show each and every week, along with that, you get 4 other podcasts per week. It's all at patreon.com/snmeradio. That's patreon.com/snmeradio. Check it out. We appreciate your support.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are clear.
This is Sunday night's main event.
Look, I don't know what's going to happen tonight, but boy, is it exciting.
With Dan the Mouth Labransky.
Everyone has a price.
And Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone, and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
In clear violation of the law.
Well, brothers and sisters, cats and chicks, Karrion Kross is out. Paul Heyman is in, and we are here live again this week. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday night's main event here on TSN 1150. I'm Dan the Mouth Labransky. Yes, no Jason Agnew this week. The guy is not here. I think he might even have a date. It's a big night for him, so I'm driving the ship, and my co-pilot tonight, I'm happy to bring him aboard. In fact, we have never had a chance to do this before, so this is groundbreaking. Mark Andrada joins me this week, and Mark, I don't think we need another Thunderdome, and I certainly don't think we need 2 pay-per-view shows in a week, but that's exactly what we got.
Uh-oh. Grab a bong and get a couple of beers out. Get them out of your parents' fridge. Daddy Agnew's away. And Sunday Night Main Event Universe is going to be babysat by their 2 cool uncles.
That's right, kiddies.
Listen, two pay-per-views might be too much, but it gets us to do this, so that's all right.
Yes, indeed. And we have got a power-packed show. We're going to run down the entire pay-per-view and talk about lots of other great stuff from the week in pro wrestling. So give us a shout. We are live tonight. It's pay-per-view night. We want to hear from you. Did you participate in the Thunderdome experience? Did you watch Payback tonight? 1-866-729-2562. Give us a shout. And hey, remember, the best call of the night gets a $50 gift card from Pizzaville. So start thinking up those clever comments, because you got 2 hard hats to deal with tonight in me and Andrada. But we are going to have a great time. 1-866-729-2562. We're going to come back. We're going to take a break here. We're going to run down the pay-per-view and lots more to come your way right here on Sunday night's main event.
Only when light is combined with the dark is the universe perfect and complete. Like a hypnotizing drum beat heard deep within the swampy shores, a bubbling kettle brews. She engages your spirit, sending ripples across the surface of your soul. Allow her sacred science and divine state of consciousness to unveil your contact point toward complete clarity. Cosmically grounded, she is all at once every element, fueling the nectar of your memory, drip by velvety drip. Ascending from the mist, Haze Mama breaks in balance while granting an alternative perception, otherwise unavailable, unless by virtue of her wondrous alchemy. Shh. Haze Mama New England IPA, available year-round for only $3.50. Great Lakes, brewed for you, Ontario.
Roman Reigns lying in wait. And Reigns with a spear to Strowman. And the cover by Reigns. Roman Reigns has won the Universal Championship. Here is your winner and the new Universal Champion, Roman Reigns.
I'm mad.
The big payday.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we had tonight. It was the big payback. And unfortunately, it wasn't from James Brown, but it was from the WWE. You're listening to Sunday night's main event here on TSN 1150. Dan Labransky along with you and Mark Andrada. And we will now run through the entire payback pay-per-view for you. And that clip off the top, there you go. That was the culmination of the main event with Roman Reigns winning the Universal title there in the three-way match with The Fiend and Braun Strowman. I got some things to say about that, and I'm sure you do too, Mark, but we'll save that. And let's get into running it down here. So we started with the pre-show. Not a lot on the pre-show. I found this stuff, I don't know about you being the comedian, Mark, but that stuff with R-Truth that they did on the pre-show was absolutely not funny at all and went on way too long.
Yeah, JBL I would call a comedy goalie. You know what I mean? You can hurl jokes, but he's going to block them every chance he gets. You know, at one point he just said, "I don't understand what's happening. I don't get it." And it's like, yeah, you clearly haven't been watching R-Truth for this. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it was the standard thing of R-Truth getting confused. He thought he was there for Raw Talk, which is the next night. It's funny, but it went on way too long, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I like R-Truth, and I find him funny, and I like the bit. My problem with the bit this time was JBL specifically. JBL right. calling it out, it grinds it to a halt. You know, yes. I think R-Truth could have pulled it off if he didn't have JBL there muddling the whole thing up.
We only had one match on the pre-show. It was the tag team match with the ladies, the Riot Squad, Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan, taking on the Iconics, Peyton Royce and Billie Kay. You know, I know this is only mid-card to low-card stuff, but I was really happy to finally see a match on the pre-show that actually had some storyline. It actually moved something ahead. Okay, like I said, it's mid-card, but I just thought this was great the way they actually used this to further this story with Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan, and Ruby not really sure if Liv is on the same page, and the Iconics trying to push them for the breakup. And I thought they actually used it here. It really looked like in the match like they were going to break up, but they actually stay together. Ruby gets the win with the right kick. She pins Kay. I was just happy to see something that sort of meant something on the pre-show.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, yeah, I get it. It's, you know, the lower end of the card, but you take what you can get in terms of storyline. I like that they came to the ring wearing matching outfits. It really sort of, it let me know as the audience that these two were on the same page. I liked that. I also like their new name. I think Liv Morgan at the end called them the Living Riot. I'm super into it. I like the name. I like Living Riot, and I'm pleased for Joe Aguinaldo alone. I'm pleased that Ruby Riott got a win.
Yes, exactly. Yes, Joe will be very happy about that. As you mentioned, yes, they did go to the pre-show desk afterwards. They basically apologized to each other, said this was the beginning. So yes, they are definitely back. And it was just nice to see the pre-show actually mean something rather than just be an hour of kind of like drivel.
Yeah, strong agree.
Okay, let's get into the actual show here. Then, speaking of the pre-show, these guys got to move up from the pre-show last week for the Survivor Series, or sorry, SummerSlam. Apollo Crews was on the pre-show with the U.S. title, winning it from MVP. This time, Bobby Lashley challenges. It's the opening match. I thought it was an okay match. I mean, it started out with Lashley just destroying them. You know, he kicks out of the standing moonsault. He did all kinds of crazy stuff in this one. It was really about Lashley kind of controlling it, a big part of it. I think Apollo, he got very little in the match. I think he got a frog splash for a near fall. But, you know, Lashley comes back with that big choke slam, gives him the full Nelson, and Crews basically taps out. So Lashley wins the title. I thought it was weird that the babyface attacked the heel after the match. He's lost clean. It was almost like they were trying to make it's going to continue, but that seemed weird to me.
Yeah, that's the same feeling I got, that perhaps this feud was going to go on and on. Frog splash we got in this match, and I wrote down, this is the first of how many frog splashes are we going to get? First match of the night, we already have a frog splash. We know Sasha's going to give one, and we what are the odds we're going to see one in the Mysterio match?
Yeah.
So we got the first one here in this one. This match felt a bit long to me, and I didn't care for the picture gimmick at the end. Also, somebody's got to teach Lashley how to do the Wakanda Forever. It's not.
Yes.
He was doing it wrong. The other two guys had it right.
Yeah.
Did you care for that picture gimmick at the end?
No, that was ridiculous. I don't know. And that was the only match they did it on.
Yeah, real strange to grab the photographer.
Yeah. What Mark's talking about is they had a cameraman there taking pictures of Lashley and the Hurt Business after the win, and they would show, you'd hear the click of the camera, and then it would cut right to a still photo. And they did about three in a row, and then it went back to real time, which, I thought it was kind of weird myself.
Real strange. Also, like I was saying, Shelton Benjamin and MVP doing the Wakanda Forever symbol, and Lashley not getting it right. Just folding his arms.
I'm surprised Shelton got it right. He looked stoned out of his mind. His eyes were tiny little slits the entire thing there. I don't know. He looked like he was really enjoying himself.
Yeah, good for him.
So after that match, we go to Kayla with Paul Heyman. She's in front of Roman Reigns' dressing room. Paul, of course, is like, oh, who are you? I guess Charlie wasn't available. And she's asking him, will Roman sign the contract? So I guess the angle going into this is that he hasn't yet signed the contract for the three-way match that's at the beginning, or it's at the main event of the show. And Paul Heyman's like, I have every reason to believe he will. And then he went inside Roman's dressing room and told her that she couldn't come in.
Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of weird, this whole thing throughout the show about him not signing the contract, but as we'll see, that played into the main event.
Yeah, I'm so happy to see Heyman back on TV. I think he's such a great performer, and I enjoy him every time I see him.
It's going to be, I think this is a great project for him, too. And also, honestly, when you think about it, fans have been talking about this for, 2 years?
Oh, if not longer, yeah.
Yeah, if not longer. So I think a lot of people are going to enjoy this. From there, we go to Keith Lee. He's backstage with your buddy JBL. Yes. He says, JBL Gels, I know you're going to do good. Here's a couple of hedge funds you should check out. He says, you only need $1 million to get in. And Lee says, well, that's kind of out of my ballpark. And JBL says, you're on your way. And I know this is the pressure of your first big match. And if you lose, don't feel bad because Randy is one of the greatest ever.
See, I don't mind JBL in this role.
Right.
On-screen character, I don't mind. It was him on that panel trying to do comedy with R-Truth that I was like, get off of here.
It wasn't working. Okay, next match, Big E versus Sheamus. So obviously they're kind of doing here with Big E what they did with Kofi. He's on his own now. The other two are out. So they're going to put the push on him as a single guy. Do you think this is a mistake after just doing it with Kofi so quickly? Are fans just going to go, oh, yeah, well, it's the same thing as Kofi. He'll have a run, and then he'll drift back to the mid-card. To me, this almost, as much as I'd like to root for Big E, this almost seems determined not to work to me.
Yeah, I'm still for it. I still believe that Big E could be, a main event player if they handle him the right way. I just think there's a couple of tweaks that they need to do. Maybe remix that entrance music, because having the exact same entrance music with the exact same graphics,
yes,
and his bright, I don't mind the bright tights. I really liked his boots. Did you notice his boots tonight? Looked like All That, the old TV show All That.
Yeah.
I like those boots a lot, but I just want something tweaked about the graphics and the music coming out. Also, he should take the singlet down during the match. That guy is, when he took that down after the match, I was
right.
Oh, wow, Big E's so jacked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does that during the match to sort of hulk up a bit? Man, I'd be into that.
So Sheamus comes out. He said the New Day haven't been holding him back, but they've been propping him up, and now it's his turn to fall. And the basic story in the match was Big E kind of having the bad knee after Sheamus put him in this crazy half crab for a long time and really stretched out the knee. He's given him a sharpshooter at one point. Myself, in terms of the match itself, I enjoyed this match. I thought it told a good story. I thought both guys worked really well in it. Big E gets the win with the big ending, which is the right, obviously, person to win this match. They're obviously going to push him for the singles run. And I did get a kick out of Big E really getting into Graves' space after he won. He just went over to the commentary desk and just basically yelled at him, which I thought was really great. So we'll see how the Big E push goes. I'm with you, Mark. I would like to see it be a good, positive thing. But it's hard to say. We'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll see. Catching that brogue kick at the end of the match, too, was such a great spot. Genuinely surprised by that.
Definitely. But at least, again, in terms of what they should do, this was the right thing. And myself, I actually enjoyed it. I thought Sheamus and Big E worked together really well.
Yeah, agreed. Also, I love Sheamus coming to the ring looking like Snatch.
Next up, it's Elise Ashton, one of the new backstage reporters. She's with Matt Riddle, and he's talking about, she said, you know, how do you get up for this match? He goes, oh, I'm always motivated. People are attacking me, and I'm done with it. You know, Corbin's afraid I'm going to take his crown. And she said, Corbin tweeted out earlier that he will prove that Riddle is a failure in the ring, the way he's already proven he's won at home.
Get out of here.
That was nasty. And Riddle was not happy. He just looked very angry and said nothing.
I hate it.
Yeah, this wasn't something they worked at beforehand, right? This was just thrown in right here, right?
Yeah, they've never mentioned this on TV before, and I don't care for them to do it. Also, she called him a bodacious barefoot bro. Yeah. I was like, oh boy, these writers are really having a good time. Get out of here.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit of a strong comment as well, and I was trying to remember if they had brought that up before, but didn't think they had.
No, I don't remember that, yeah.
Okay, so then we go from there to another little quick vignette with Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax backstage. Of course, they're going to be tagging up together to take on Sasha and Bayley for the titles later in the show. This was basically to show that they really don't like each other, which we all kind of know. And then they finally just go, look, let's just not talk to each other. Let's just have the match and go out there and do what we can. Are you a fan of this, the tag team where they hate each other? It's kind of an old school trope that... you know, they've brought back once again.
I do. I love it. I fear that they do it a little too much, but I like it when a tag team doesn't get along. Sort of that odd couple. Mm-hmm. They don't like each other, but they're going to do it for the greater good or for the common good. Yeah, I'm into that.
You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event here on TSN 1150, and myself and Mark Andrada just running through the WWE Payback pay-per-view. The next match on the docket, King Corbin versus Matt Riddle. I love the fact that Corbin attacked Riddle right after he tossed the shoes.
Yes.
I thought that was great, made for a great visual. Corbin just went wild, beating on him like crazy. Riddle got the sleeper on him a couple of times. This one point was really weird. He gets the advantage back because Corbin is yapping at the announcer or something. I always hate transitions that are that weak like that. I always like it when they transition somehow to moves. Corbin got the deep six for a near fall. Riddle did the bro to sleep and the floating bro, which is sort of a moonsault senton combo, and gets the pin. Again, I didn't have a big problem with the match. The right guy won the match.
Yeah.
There you go. It's what should happen.
It felt a little long to me. I kind of was in the mood for, you know, what is it? This is a third match in the show. I was kind of in the mood for a squash, like a real quick in and out. You know, like if he attacked Corbin from behind, rather if Corbin attacked Riddle from behind and Riddle just got the better of him real quick, I think I would have. I just, Corbin getting so much of this match. Like
He got a lot.
He got like 90-95% of the match.
Yes, he did get a lot.
I know people hate Corbin. I'm not one of those people. I think he's a great heel. I think that he really bugs people and people genuinely get mad. And I think that's good for his character. I just don't know that I wanted to watch him wrestle this long at this stage of the feud, because clearly this is going to go on as well.
Oh, yeah. No, I would think so for sure. Well, I mean, well, yeah, and yes, we'll answer that right now, because the next thing we saw was Riddle backstage after he won, going on about how great his victory is. He says he was so happy to have done it. And then, of course, Corbin just comes out and attacks him. So it does continue. My question is why? Why does this continue? Why does it need to continue?
That's the question with so many WWE storylines, to be fair. Why?
Like he won, he got the pin, he beat him. Like, I guess, I mean, part of it is probably that they don't have a full roster.
Sure.
And the fact that they have 75 million hours of TV every week also is a big part of it, right? So I guess they feel it needs to go on. This was the perfect feud to get Riddle in the mix and give him a win, and then it just should be quick and they should move on.
Yeah, see, and I think this is, like, helping my point about this should have been a squash match, because if it was going to continue, then Corbin could at least say, you got the better of me too quick, we didn't even really get a match, and then maybe we could have a match, because he got him so fast, but they had a match, and Riddle won. The end, right?
And that's it, exactly. The face vanquishes the heel. That's it. Move on. Next story, you know?
Yeah.
So kind of weird about that one. Next up, we had the women's tag team title match here. Bayley and Sasha, of course, the champions, defending against a team that don't like each other, Nia and Shayna Baszler. This is a bit of a weird one just to begin with, because the women's tags titles, there's not a lot of tag teams. Like, I mean, they had to throw Nia and Baszler together to create this match. So I always thought it was weird that they did the women's tag titles.
Listen, I'm happy to see Nia in a tag team so that I don't have to see her in a singles match. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Okay.
I'm pleased as punch about that.
Well, then you probably enjoyed how the match started, because Nia got taken out very early so they could work over Baszler. Nia did that crazy spot with Sasha where she had her and she swung her into the barrier a couple times. That yeah. looked harsh. I mean, I know Nia has the reputation for hurting people, but man, that looked very nasty there.
I was kind of hoping that Nia wasn't really going to get into this match at all and Baszler was going to do it on her own. And that would really justify Nia's over-celebration that she does at the end, you know?
Right. Yeah, actually storyline-wise, that would have been great. And that would give you a probably more substantial thing why they don't like each other, right?
Yeah, and the other positive, we won't have to see Nia wrestle so much in the ring.
this match, they were definitely trying to tell the story of kind of Sasha and Bayley being overwhelmed by these two people. The basic finish here came after Shayna had them both in submission moves at one time, which was crazy. She had the Muda Lock on Sasha and the Coquina Clutch on Bayley. And Sasha is trying to help, kind of gets out of it, the lock, and is trying to help Bayley, but Nia just cinched it in so tight and kind of pushed, kind of used Bayley's head almost as Sasha's head as momentum against Bayley, and Bayley tapped out. So you get your wish. You have champions that don't like each other. We have the end of the Sasha versus Bayley as a team, but probably the beginning of their feud with each other, which is good. I think people have been wanting that to happen for quite a while. So I was happy with how this worked out. The right team won, and the storyline moves along the way it should.
Yeah, I agree. And we also had Frog Splash number 2 in this one.
That's right. Yes.
I also got a burnout. at one point, I think it was Michael Cole said that Baszler was a protege of Rousey. In what? Eye makeup application? Get out of
yeah.
here. She was doing MMA longer than Rousey. What are you saying?
Yeah, well, you know, it's WWE revisionist history, right, Mark?
Oh, come on, man.
So after the match, of course, Shayna and Nia were there in the ring. They're celebrating. She says, Baszler says, we're not best friends. And Nia, like you said, she just ran around and screamed like a little kid that they were champs.
I like that. I thought she was perfectly obnoxious there.
Yeah.
That was great.
But I do like your idea better if Baszler had worked most of the match and then Nia does all the celebrating at the end. That would give you a real – and it would also kind of define the roles of each, who's the heel and who's the babyface.
Yeah, especially because Nia, like, if there was, like, a small person who didn't get in the ring and over-celebrated, that's one thing. But because Nia's this powerhouse – and for her to never get in the ring and be celebrating kind of makes it a new dynamic for me.
Okay, so moving on to the next match, probably one of the surprises of the night, Randy Orton takes on Keith Lee. I was kind of worried about this match a little bit after what I had seen them do on Raw this past week. I wasn't sure if they were going to give Keith Lee what he needed, but in fact they did. This match went, you can't say this one went long, Mark. This one was 7 minutes long and basically had Orton dominate a huge chunk, but he does end up losing in the end. The finish of the match I thought was kind of weird because Orton had been dominating this whole time. You know, they're even kind of working more of a Randy Orton style match than a Keith Lee style match. And then all of a sudden, Orton tries to go for the RKO. Lee reverses it into the spirit bomb and gets the pin.
Yeah, clean in the middle.
Yes, clean in the middle, 7 minutes, very quickly. I understand the impact. Was it? Do you think this was too quick, Mark, or was this just right?
I think the amount of time was just right. But if anything, my problem with it is that so Orton takes most of this match,
yes,
and Keith Lee wins. Have you heard this story yet tonight? Like, you know what I mean? Corbin,
yeah,
takes most of the match. Matt Riddle wins. Sheamus takes most of the match and Big E wins. Like, I just feel like I just wanted something a little stronger. And you know what? I guess that's asking too much. It was probably, we probably got what we could with him just winning clean. So,
well, I think exactly. I think, we have to take the positives out of this, Mark,
yeah,
is that the right guy won.
Yes.
It was a big impact win for him. I still, yes, wish Orton could have worked more to Keith Lee's style, but I guess when you're going to dominate for 90% of the match, he works to his style. It was, as soon as you see a match where one guy starts to dominate for a long time, you can almost predict that the other guy is going to win. So to me, that often takes me out of the match because, yeah, I feel like, okay, look, this is obvious the other guy is going to win. But this one, I think because they kept it short, it didn't bother me quite as much. So we'll see. I mean, that's a good start for him to get this win. We'll see how they follow it up, though, because as we always say, it's often in the follow-up that they don't,
for
do
sure,
so great, right?
I mean, let's not forget that Matt Riddle beat AJ Styles when he first showed up, too. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So after that, we get into another promo from Mr. Heyman. So he said, look, Roman promised he'd be here and he guaranteed he'd be in the match. And he said he will leave this evening as Universal Champion. And you can believe that and you can believe me. And he just looked at her and said, are you satisfied? So there you go. They're continuing this whole story about, is he going to sign the contract? Is he going to sign the contract? Is he going to sign the contract?
Yeah, and not the first time Paul Heyman has looked a woman in the eyes and asked if she was satisfied.
Whoa, ba-doonch. It was just a very strange thing to keep playing through. I mean, if you're going to think logically, there's so many loopholes in that. It's not funny, right?
Right.
But that seemed to be the way they wanted to play it. Next up, we had the tag match coming off the match from last weekend. Rey Mysterio and his son Dominic taking on Seth Rollins and Murphy, who seems, I guess, Murphy, he's lost his first name, I guess, like,
yeah,
so many of them seem to do.
Yep, yep.
This one, again, I thought it was not a bad match for this one. Dominic went after Seth right away. He did a crazy dive and... Seth and Murphy actually caught him, and Seth whipped him around into a Falcon Arrow for a near fall, which I thought really looked great. Basically, it's just a really good, solid tag match, fast-paced. They did the finish was basically Dominic doing the 619 and then the Frog Splash, number three.
Yep.
He did that off the top and he pinned Murphy. So again, this is who the guys that needed to win the match won the match. The main thing I'm gonna say is like Dominic continues to look great for how early this is in his career. I think he's doing a great job. And yeah.
I really like Dominic Mysterio. I am super into this guy. And Mysterio and Sun, I think, is a great... I want to see these guys as a tag team for a little while. I want to see them make a run with the tag championships. I want to see them hang out together for a while because I'm really liking what this is.
I'm sure they could have a nice Mysterio and Sun t-shirt, and maybe even they get a TV show where they have their own junkyard and they live together.
Yes, please.
That's just me. When you said Mysterio and Sun, that's the first thing that shows where I'm at. That's what popped into my head.
I love it. Change their theme song.
So, Dominic wins, gets the pin. After that, the Hurt Business, we see them just leaving the building. There was nothing to it. And this finally leads us in to the main event of the show. It's a three-way, no holds barred. Now, it is no holds barred, but the pin or submission has to take place inside the ring. It's Roman Reigns against The Fiend against Braun Strowman. Okay, this was a bit longer. If you want to complain about a long match, this is the one to complain about. It was almost half an hour long. This had a weird start to me because I guess this whole contract thing, it wasn't really clear, but The Fiend comes out first, and then he's got the lights off, the red lights are flashing, and when the lights come on, Braun Strowman's right behind him. And the two of them get started with Reigns not even being there. And the first thing out of my head was like, what? How can you start the match without the other guy being there?
It's a no holds barred match. There's no rules.
So, well, then I guess that is actually what happened here. The Fiend gets the Sister Abigail on Strowman really early, but he kicks out. They're fighting all over the place. You know, the Fiend drove Strowman through the announce table. They actually showed Alexa Bliss watching backstage a couple times, although it never came into play.
Oh boy.
Later yeah. on, so
they're really sure. laying on the Harley Quinn thing thick with her
yes.
already. Like yeah. she's entranced by the Fiend. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm into it. I'm also worried about where it's going to go.
Yeah, well, the fact that he kind of looks like the Joker already, a demented version of the Joker already, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, and he pulled out the mallet, and I was like,
yeah,
oh,
well,
man.
That's it. The cartoon hammer had to come out. Yeah. All I can think of when I see that is, like, I don't even think Joker. I think Bugs Bunny whenever I see
really?
This. The giant hammer. It just turns it into an instant cartoon for me.
I was saying that I bet $10 that Alexa Bliss ends up with that mallet. She's going to be carrying that thing around all the time.
Oh, man. We shall see. That one I hope you're wrong about.
Me too.
they continued the brawl up the ramp. They did a crazy spot where Strowman speared the Fiend off the stage, and the two both went through some sort of covering table, something that was covered to protect them. I don't know if you noticed it, Mark. They had the crowd noise, the piped-in crowd noise, jacked at this point. It was insane how loud the fake crowd noise was.
Yeah.
The Fiend did a suplex off the top on Strowman. Back in the back, they make their way back to the ring. The Fiend does a suplex off the top on Strowman, and they did the old Big Show spot there where the ring collapses. They hit the suplex off the top. The poles go down. The whole ring goes down. So the whole thing is the ring falls apart, and they're laying there. This yeah. is where it starts to stink as far as I'm concerned.
Really?
Yeah. Like, so then at this point, and honestly, if you're going to come in like this, the entrance music, I hate it when they play the entrance music in situations like this. Roman's music hits. He comes out. He's with Heyman. He finally signs the contract at the top of the ramp. He runs down there. He went to cover the Fiend and Braun, both of them, but they both kicked out. The Fiend grabbed him and got him with the mandible claw, but then Reigns gave him a shot in the jewels, and then he speared Braun, and he won the match and the title. I'm not surprised that he won. I thought that he won, but I wasn't, even though he's supposed to be a heel, I wasn't crazy about the execution. I didn't really like this whole idea of him just signing at the last minute and coming in and taking them out after the match is already kind of done. I think it's kind of I understand he's a heel, but I didn't like the finish.
I didn't mind it so much. I thought it was kind of funny, though, that he gave Braun Strowman like a billion chair shots and he kicked out, but one spear. And he was done. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know about that. But sure, I guess.
So there you go. I'm not surprised. I'm pretty sure as soon as he came back, and then when we saw him with Heyman this week, that kind of seals the deal that he's probably going to take the title away from these two guys. And I think it's great that they finally turned him into a heel. I would just rather he was out there the whole match rather than just coming in at the last minute. But then again, that is probably typical heel, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty heelish move, sure.
All right. Okay, so that's our rundown of WWE Payback. Now we want to hear what you guys think. 1-866-729-2562. Give us a call. Give us your thoughts. If you happen to do the Thunderdome experience, let us know. Let's hear what that was all about. I'm curious as to whether they're still telling people what to do. Although, by what I saw, I'm getting the feeling that, yes, they still are telling the people what to do. But we can talk about that and lots more. Sean Spears interview coming up as well. So stay tuned. Lots more Sunday night's main event right here on TSN 1150.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when we realised that our extra large pizza is 2 whole inches longer than the so-called extra large from the big pizza conglomerates. How do they even call theirs extra large when Pizzaville gives you 18 whopping inches, steaming hot? Because, let's be honest, who wouldn't want 2 more inches?
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza, fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
Basil looking at
tie up Banks into some sort of leg lock here.
The first part of a Muda lock.
And now Bailey's in the Carol Fluda clutch. She's got Banks in the Muda lock. She's got Bailey in the Carol Fluda clutch.
Shayna Baszler, a one-woman wrecking machine right now.
And Banks trying to force a break. And look at Baszler. Baszler using Banks' arm to her advantage underneath Bailey's chin. Bailey taps out. Bailey taps out.
We've got new champions.
All right, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. The finish of the women's tag team title match there. And the next stage in the Bayley-Sasha storyline looks like it's coming out of that right there. I have to admit, Mark, I did like the way that was set up because each of them, both Bayley and Sasha, are going to have a reason to be mad at the other.
Yes, I agree. I like that it was Bayley that tapped, and she was the one that cost Sasha her last belt
right. Out
of her two that she had. Yeah, this is what they should have been doing the whole time when they teased it and didn't do it, and then they sort of did it but then didn't, and then teased it again but didn't, and then they got into a fight but then they got together. All of that nonsense that they did for the past couple of years, it's incredible to me that I think it's a testament, frankly, to how good Bayley and Sasha
yes.
are.
Yes.
As performers, that they can make this work after all the nonsense we've seen them go through.
It's true. I'm actually looking forward to finally having this feud, and that's really just based on stuff in the last like month or so. You know, I think the two of them are going to be excellent together. I guess the other team with Nia and Baszler, do they just break up instantly and the women's tag titles disappear altogether?
I don't know. I think maybe they hold on to it for a long time and just get more and more resentful of each other and like they want to lose it, but they can't because they're too good.
So do we get a series of matches with all these kind of fluke finishes as the two guys that hate each other somehow win the match every week?
I think it's Shayna just keeps winning because Shayna's just that good. And
right.
She just can't help but destroy people.
Okay, let's take some calls here. Yeah, you know, give us a shout, 905-741-2766. I'm not good with numbers, folks. give me some room here. But we have Jacob from Hamilton on the line. He did the Thunderdome experience. Jacob, how did it go down? Was it enjoyable? Is it something you'd like to do on a regular basis? Or was it not so hot? Jacob, are you there? Okay, looks like we've lost Jacob. I wanted to ask you anyways, Mark.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the Thunderdome? Because me, I'm not a fan at all. I find it really distracting. I find it hard to watch matches when all the heads in the background are out of proportion or all these different weird, each one's got a different color and look. It doesn't look like a real crowd to me. It doesn't really help, I don't think, with the matches.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It doesn't bother me as much as I think it bothers you. I think it looked, when Vince McMahon first came out and it was in the Thunderdome, I was kind of into it, to be honest. I don't think it's going to save the show by any means, and I don't think that this should or could ever take the place of a real crowd. But if it gets people involved in watching and they want to be on camera, I mean, of course people are going to goof around. People have already been goofing around with it. But, like, I don't know. I don't find it so distracting. But I think the big plus for me is the cool entrances. Like, the Fiend's entrance with those screens everywhere, I'm super into that. And you do a couple more of those, and I'm even more in, frankly.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I said that on the show last week. In terms of helping the guys' entrances, I think it's fantastic because you can literally light that entire room doing whatever you want. But once it turns into a wall of all these different faces of different proportion, color, light, clarity, some are blurred, and I don't know. To me, I find myself wanting to look at those screens and look for people doing things they shouldn't be doing and that rather than paying attention to the match. So it's not really working for me, I don't think.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me that much.
Okay, so we couldn't get through to Jacob there, so let's try Joe. Joe's in Mississauga. Joe, how you doing, Joe?
Mark and Dan, what's going on, guys?
I figured it was going to be Mr. Aguinaldo. What's happening, sir? What are your thoughts on tonight's extravaganza?
All right, so I just want to jump in on something Mark mentioned regarding either Big E, Sheamus, or Matt Riddle, Corbin. I would have liked to have seen like either Big E or Matt Riddle, whichever one, get more of a match and do a more dominant win. And I think I was leaning towards Big E because Big E, this is supposed to be the start of his big push. I would have liked to have seen him be a bit more dominant in his match with Sheamus. I agree, though, right person won. I just thought that Big E should have got more. And sticking with the Big E thought, like, it's like, okay, so this is the start of Big E's big push. Meanwhile, Keith Lee just gets a shot at Randy Orton. What's up with that? I love me some Shayna. Obviously, I love me some Ruby Riott. Thanks for the shout-out earlier in the show, guys. But, yeah, like, I mean, you know, like the show itself wasn't bad. I mean, you know, it was what it was, considering it was a pay-per-view that was put together in a week or whatever.
Right, right.
But again, like, yeah, like, I just thought that, like, if this is supposed to be your big push for Big E and Matt Riddle, I would have liked to have seen those guys be more dominant. And I think, like, the problem, too, is with Sheamus and Corbin specifically, like those, I understand that you're putting Riddle and Big E with those guys is supposed to give them quote unquote the rub because those guys are higher level. But I don't think those two are good enough to lose in a match, or like they're not good enough to put guys over like say Seth Rollins did with Dominic Mysterio in SummerSlam and this match as well, which I think also hurts Big E and Matt Riddle. When they're wrestling guys like Corbin and Sheamus. Like, respect to both of those guys, but those guys aren't good enough to put someone over. So, yeah, you could beat them, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really mean anything. And I think that's my biggest issue with this Big E and this Matt Riddle thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about how they handled the whole Reigns thing here with the contract and him not coming in until the end of the match and getting the win?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. I watched part of the match, and when his music came on, I actually had to go do something. So I don't think it would be fair of me to make a comment. I'm kind of at a wait and see kind of deal because I do like Reigns coming back as this badass. I'm just not sure if I'm digging it with the Paul Heyman thing. I would have liked to have seen him come back and just be like, "This is my yard. I don't care who's I don't care who's got the belt. It's mine. It's rightfully mine. I'm the chosen one. Whatever he wants." Say, and I think the other part of it too is like, look, if you're going to turn him heel, I don't have a problem with that either, but you don't have an established baby face yet, and maybe I guess the build is to find out who's this established baby face that's eventually going to knock Reigns off the perch. I'm just not sure if I'm digging the story yet. I guess that's what I'm getting at.
So you would rather had Reigns come back as a baby face, which is kind of the traditional thing when a guy's been away for a while.
You know what? Like I don't have a problem with him being a heel because we've been asking for that forever, and the guy's
right.
I don't mind it, but I guess from like if you want to look at it from like just a business perspective, forget creative for a second. You know, you're hurting for ratings, right? And is it a good idea to make arguably your most popular, you know, superhero, with all respect to Ricochet, but is it a good idea to make your most popular wrestler a heel right now when you're trying to get your ratings up? Again, I'm not saying it won't work. I'm just kind of curious as to the logic behind it. That's all. But I'm willing to give it a shot because I do dig, you know, badass Roman Reigns. I think that's really what his character should be. You know, not suffering succotash, for example, right? But so yeah, a jury's still out for me on the Roman Reigns thing.
I also think that Roman Reigns going heel is really gonna babyface him more than anything else. I know that's a weird thing to say, but I feel like this is more of, even though technically it's a heel move, I really feel like people are just gonna like him more because of this.
I hope so, because again, I really dig the badass Roman Reigns, and I think eventually he will get it'll be kind of like say The Rock, for example, or Stone Cold, where they started off as heels, but they were just so good that everyone cheered them. But again, we got to see what they do with the creative on that because, the whole pushing down your throat thing, you know, like with both Roman Reigns and, say, John Cena. I don't know if that's hurt Roman Reigns, you know, right now. But again, I think it's something that it's a good, you know, it's a nice sort of change of direction for the guy. Hope it works. But again, I'm going to say jury's still out.
All right, thank you very much for your call, Mr. Aguinaldo, and I'll talk to you later in the week when we do the All Elite Wrestling podcast. for the Patreons here at SNME Radio. Let's go to, is it Wes from Vancouver on line two? Wants to talk about Mr. Roman Reigns?
This is Wes from Vancouver.
Wes. Hey, how's it going?
Good. Okay. So nice to have you both on. I want to say something. Let me get there. Okay. Stone Cold, Hogan, Flair, The Rock, Shawn Michaels, Brock Lesnar. You know what they have in common? They don't wrestle with their shirts on. We have Roman Reigns back. And you know why I think it just doesn't work when I watch him wrestle? And it sounds odd, but he's got the vest. Seth Rollins loses the vest. We now look at him as a main eventer. Dean Ambrose, now Jon Moxley, now wrestles without his shirt on. We look at him as a main eventer. But for so long, Reigns has got the vest on. And I'm saying this, Reigns, you got the pearly new white ones going. We see it. They're shining new, that smile. Let's lose the vest. Let's rebrand him. Let's show off that new physique. I don't know what you guys think, but I'm thinking Roman Reigns, villain person here that he's going to be, the heel. We need to lose the vest.
Well, the only thing I can say about him wearing the shirt is they want people to buy the shirt. So that's why he's wearing the shirt. Other than that, I don't know. I've never really approached it from the point of what they wear in terms of who looks better in a main event spot. To me, it's more about the performance. Mark?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think I'm going to agree with Wes on this one, because I have seen Roman Reigns with his shirt off on TV, just like everybody else. It wasn't a weird thing. And there's no reason for him to be wearing that vest. He looks great without a shirt. So, you know what I mean? It's not like Baron Corbin, who like needs to wear something over his, you know what I mean, over his torso. He's got nothing to hide. So I don't know why he's wearing the vest.
I just think, too, when you look at the toughest people, you look like a New Japan match. Imagine there's a wrestler in New Japan who had the Roman Reigns vest on, and they got in a chalk vest. You would totally.
Oh, wait a second. I think I've seen Ishii wrestle in a shirt, and he's pretty badass, shirt or not.
No, but Mouth, I'm talking the vest. You know what I'm talking about. It looks like he's wearing armor.
Okay.
It does.
New shirt. He's got to kill it. It's got to go. If he's stepping up to be kind of the new Heyman guy, we need to just lose the vest. That's my campaign. Lose the vest 2020.
Yeah. If nothing else, it'll change his look. And it's always good to change the look up a little bit, especially when you're rebranding, right? Change the look. Why not?
Yeah, he looks super jacked underneath that new T-shirt. But
yeah.
We just got to lose the vest. And then I think
maybe he tears it off. What if he tears it off like in a sort of a ceremonial kind of way like Hogan did? Comes to the ring one day and just tears it off and we never see it again.
that would be good. A nice moment where like there's this official tossing of the vest.
Yeah, he rips it up, throws it into the crowd. Some kid gets to keep it forever and we don't see it ever again.
Yeah.
Please just get rid of the vest. Lose the vest, Roman Reigns 2020.
Get that
all
trendy,
right.
Man.
Thank you so much, Wes, for your call. That was an awesome theory. That was a very excellent theory. All right, we're going to take a little bit of a break here, but we're going to be back with more of Sunday night's main event. We'll talk with Dave Meltzer, Sean Spears' interview, and more of your calls. So give us a shout, 1-866-729-2562, or locally 905-741-2766. Back with more right after this.
Kappa Foods presents 3 premium sauces to enhance any meal. Nothing complements your barbecue like the sweet, smoky, savory black maple. Bring on the taste of Japanese pub food in your own home with dark sakura. To add some extra spice, reach for Red Diablo, a sharp Spanish flavor loaded with smoked paprika. Get all 3 sauces now on Amazon. Just search Kappa Foods. For more saucy details, visit kappafoods.com.
Well, Keith Lee, this is not the introduction you wanted to the WWE.
Oh, calling for the RKO, Keith Lee. Oh, look at the strength. Look at the power. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Spirit bomb. Cover.
2, 3.
And Keith Lee has beaten Randy. Yeah.
All right, we are back. Sunday night's main event here, TSN 1150. That was the finish there. Maybe the big surprise of the night. I think we all knew that Keith Lee needed to win the match with Randy Orton. I don't think any of us expected it. You know, honestly, because of how early this match started, Mark, I thought, oh, God, we're getting the 25-minute Randy Orton special here.
Right, yeah, I'm with you. I also was fully prepared to be making fun of what Keith Lee was wearing to the ring, and then he won clean in the ring so decisively, and I did not care anymore. that guy could have been wearing a Mickey Mouse costume, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, but you love Mickey Mouse. You would have loved that.
That's true, but I don't think he should be wrestling in a Mickey Mouse costume. That's ridiculous. Those giant white gloves, come on.
We've got one more call on the line I want to get to because he calls every week and it's always great to hear from him. Hansi's on the line. What's up, brother?
What's going on, guys? How are you? I hope you're all well. I thought the pay-per-view was pretty good. I'm with you. I didn't like how they debuted Lee on Monday, but beating Randy Orton in 5 minutes, that's not a bad thing. I love the Shayna ending of the match. I thought that was really creative. And I'm not going to lie to you, after being a fickle fan for so long, I'm on board with the Roman Reigns heel turn, man. I can't complain about that. So overall, I loved. I thought the pay-per-view was really good. I criticized that I don't know why they had a week after SummerSlam, but I mean, it was still a solid event. So that's all I got to really say. But thank you for letting me on.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Hansi. I have to agree. I was really dreading this show because it was so close after the last one. I mean, last week and a week later. But overall, because I thought the show was used well the way it was supposed to get a few things in place, the stuff with Sasha and Bayley, the stuff with Keith Lee, the stuff with Roman Reigns. So even though it was kind of a tossed-together show, it didn't come across as a completely waste of a show. Like, there were good things to catch on it if you did see it.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like you're 100% agreeing with Hansi.
Well, I don't know if I want to go that far, but I was pleasantly surprised that I did enjoy most of the show, and I didn't go, oh, God, this is such a waste, or oh, this is just rematches from last week, or oh, this is just like an overblown Raw or something. I didn't feel like that. I actually thought that they were doing something with this show, even though it was thrown together at the last minute.
I don't know. It sounds like you agree with Hansi 100%.
Okay, Mark. We're going to take another quick break here because we have to. That's the way these things work. But when we come back, we're going to talk to Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. We'll talk some AEW later on as well. And don't forget Jason Agnew's interview with Sean Spears coming up. So lots more in the next hour here of Sunday Night's Main Event. So don't go anywhere.
Hansi got his own segment.
Hello. Gordy Levesque here. No one swings and hacks like I do. And no one struts quite like I do, too. And no one brews beer like Great Lakes do. Canuck Pale Ale. My beer, your beer. Our beer. Available in over 400 LCBO and grocery store across Ontario for only $2.80. Great Lakes Brewery. Brewed for you, Ontario.
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider. With Dave Meltzer on Sunday Night's Main Event.
All right, we are back, Sunday Night's Main Event. And as we always like to do about an hour into the show, especially when we are live to discuss the pay-per-view of the night and the news of the week, We welcome the one and only Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Dave, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you guys?
We are very, very good. Thank you very much. We've been just talking about Payback, a pay-per-view that took place a week after the last pay-per-view. Before we get into what was on the show tonight, Dave, did you ever get any kind of or hear any kind of reasoning, or what was the feeling that they felt they needed to do a pay-per-view a week away from one other? Was there any kind of reason?
I mean, the only speculation is that they wanted to do two straight weeks before AEW ran, because there wasn't any special thing, and really, it would have been better for the Roman Reigns debut on pay-per-view, or return on pay-per-view, to have more of a build. So, you know, rather than, especially with Heyman, you know, you just put them together and then you already have the title change. You could have built that up for 3 weeks and it would have meant a lot more.
Yeah, I'm really surprised. I just thought it was weird, and I don't see how it really helps combat anything with AEW.
Barely, but every there's so much stuff like that that, you know, you go like, God, why does that even make a difference? But it's still done. I mean, and that's been the story for 36 years.
Yeah.
On both sides. I mean, that's just the nature of pro wrestling.
What are your thoughts on the show tonight for a show that was so rushed?
I thought it was an entertaining show. There was like no great matches, but there was no bad matches either. And I think most of the stuff was kept short, so it kind of flowed pretty well. The main event, you know, there's a lot of stories told. I mean, there weren't like great matches, but the matches had stories, and there were title changes, and everything seemed to have meaning. And we didn't have a lot of ref bumps. We didn't have bad finishes. So, I thought it was entertaining. Yeah, I thought it was an entertaining show.
You mentioned Paul Heyman, obviously back with Roman Reigns here as his manager. Was this just kind of thrown together at the last minute, or was this something that was planned, or was this something they even pushed to Roman to get him to come back?
This has been in the cards. I don't know how long, but it wasn't something they just threw together like in the last week. No. I think Reigns wanted to go heel. I think it's a combination of Reigns wanting to go heel, because he did want to, and Heyman having a very high dollar contract and not being used at all, so it kind of made sense to put them together. Plus, with Heyman, you know he's a heel. You know, even if like he changes his attitude and works as a heel, people may not figure it out, because really there's so little difference between babyfaces and heels now that, you know, unless it's like Seth Rollins, people really don't even know who's what half the time, or Ray, you know, like in so many of these cases.
Yeah, certainly. And so this will be Heyman's only role, right? He's just going to be on air talent once again.
Yeah. I mean, when I watched that last match, I felt that that was a Heyman put together match, or certainly his fingerprints were on it. So, I think he'll have some influence when it comes to Roman Reigns. He always seems to, of the people that he works with, he always seems to end up with a lot of influence with them and does a lot of directing. I mean, it's not just a on-television thing. And I guess, you know, he builds up down the line the idea of, you know, Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, but it's with a different, you know, a different twist than the previous times.
Right. I did feel like that is a Heyman fingerprint when the ring collapses. I feel like that's a big-time Heyman move. What about Retribution?
Yeah, and the guy,
what was Retribution?
And Reigns coming in at the very end. I mean, it's the same thing that Lesnar did. You know, remember at Money in the Bank. You know, so yeah. And then the match where it opened up where the guys were doing their finishing moves right away and kicking out, that's a hallmark Heyman thing, is just when you have guys who are limited workers, just have them hit their big moves so people will pop for their big moves and don't really worry about, you know, building a match or anything.
Right. And what about Retribution? We didn't see them on the show at all tonight or on SmackDown.
Nope. We don't see them on Raw. It will tell me that they may have slowed down on the idea, but there was no real point to them. But yeah, you would think that on SmackDown they would, and on the pay-per-view, there would be like at least one thing on them. They did mention them though, but yeah, it feels like, before they were like this key thing in the angles, like the biggest angle really. And now it kind of, you know, now it's very much, you know, the big angle is Roman Reigns. And so maybe they didn't want to, you know, do anything, you know, they didn't need anything else. It's Roman Reigns is back and he's a heel.
Also, Dave, on tonight's show, how did you feel about how they handled Keith Lee with Randy Orton? Cause I have to admit, I was quite surprised. I really thought, especially because the other matches had moved along quickly, like you said, I thought by the time we got to that match, I'm like, oh, we're going to get 25 minutes of Randy Orton here. How did you feel about this treatment of Keith Lee?
Well, I mean, it made the most sense. I'd have been real upset if he didn't win. And I thought there was a good chance he wouldn't win, but it makes sense. If the bad part of this, if I don't say bad. It's just different. I now that they have the new setting, I was really hoping that Drew McIntyre would get, a real shot to be a champion in front of a, not in that little warehouse setting. And when Orton lost, my immediate thought is, okay, Orton's winning the title. And then they set Keith Lee up along with McIntyre to be contenders because they're very weak on top baby faces. They needed a new one. So the logical way to do it is bring somebody in and have him beat Orton now so he's got the win over Orton. And that's something they do all the time. That's what they did with Damian Priest and Bronson Reed just a couple of weeks ago. As soon as Bronson Reed beat Damian Priest, it's like, oh, Damian Priest is going to win the ladder match, which he did. So I don't know that that's the case, but obviously they're going to do Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre at the next pay-per-view. And so perhaps there's that. And then you got, Keith Lee's got the quick win over him. So, it makes sense in that sense. And doing the short match now allows them to do the long match later, rather than do this great long match now and then have nothing necessarily new for later. It worked out fine. It worked out great, really. I think a long match, if him winning a long match could have been better, but then now you can do the classic match when it's for the title rather than in the middle of the card.
Speaking of Keith Lee and the match he had last week on NXT at TakeOver, Karrion Kross injured in that match, had to give up the title this week. What are we hearing, Dave? Is he out for a significant amount of time?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. I have not heard that he's undergoing surgery, but everything that they said on television would lead you to the assumption by saying he's going to be out for a long time. So, yeah, the timing for him is not good. He was just getting the belt, and they were going to, build the whole brand around him. So they have to, put that aside and go back to that, I guess, in 6 months.
Or however long it's going
to be before he's back.
It should be interesting, too. We have Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, Finn Balor, and Adam Cole in a four-way for the title next week. All guys that have had the title, all guys that have had the title before. This is an interesting one. Where do you see this one playing out? Or who do you think the title goes back to?
Man, I don't know, because it's I think Balor is maybe the favorite.
Right.
Before.
I could see them doing the two-time thing with Adam Cole.
I don't right now see Gargano getting it. Ciampa maybe because he's just turned heel again. Balor, I think, has got a good shot at it just because he's in their minds the biggest name. Cole's got a shot at it as well. You got to remember, whatever this is not a long, term planned out thing. They were not expecting to do this, so it could go anywhere. It's not like, we've had weeks.
Right.
Where it's like,
right.
Were they hinting to do this? Because this was never in the plans.
Exactly. A couple other things, too, I want to touch on, Dave. Excalibur on AEW, still not in the commentary booth. This has been almost a month now. Have you heard anything about what's going on with him?
I was told he was going to be back August 27th, and that day has come and passed. So I don't know anything more. I could ask, and I have asked and not gotten answers. I could probably ask some more, but I've definitely asked around on that and not heard anything.
It's a strange one because the company has been incredibly quiet on it. He has not been mentioned at all on the television, and just as we keep hearing, he's coming back this week, and he's not there. It almost makes me think there's something more to this.
There could be. Maybe they don't. I don't know. When I had asked, I was told he was going to be off for two sets of tapings, and we've had two sets of tapings, and maybe it just they wanted Jericho on. But even so, even with Jericho, they could still do the three men and Jericho. So I don't, I don't know the answer. I don't. I'll try to ask around more.
Curious to see if he's back on the TV this week and back in time for the pay-per-view, because I really think he should be in the booth there for the pay-per-view.
Yeah. They miss him.
Yeah,
this week it worked
for sure.
So much because Jericho was so You know, Jericho was all over there and everything. I mean, but still, he's the guy who talks about the technical stuff in the match, and sometimes a lot of points or a lot of things kind of get missed.
Get lost, there, yeah.
I've noticed. So, you know, yeah, I hope he's back.
And finally, to end off for this week, Dave, Bullet Bob Armstrong passing away this week. You know, for a lot of fans, they probably just know him as the father of Road Dogg and stuff like that. But Bullet Bob, quite an impressive career.
Oh, yeah. In the 70s and the 80s, you know, early 80s, he was a big star, stalwart on Georgia Championship Wrestling, and in many ways, even a bigger star in Southeastern Championship Wrestling. But he was a guy who was around, you know, mostly in the Southeast. Obviously, he had four sons who wrestled. He was known, you know, the name Armstrong came because he had big arms. You know, well, you know, he started out as like the fighting fireman from Marietta, Georgia, because he really was he was an ex-Marine and an ex-fireman, and they brought him in as kind of like that kind of local, you know, the local guy. Marietta's like 20 minutes from Atlanta, the local guy. You know, who was a fireman who turned wrestler and lifted weights. And, you know, he's such a great talker. And, you know, if I know you remember later, you know, after his active career was over, you know, him as Smoky Mountain commissioner and Impact TNA commissioner and everything. He was great in those roles.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he was always great on the mic. That's for sure. He's definitely another legendary character that won't see guys like him ever again. That's for sure.
No,
what can we expect? We got to wrap it up for this week, Dave. So what can we expect in the Observer?
Probably more on Bob Armstrong coverage of these shows and everything that happens, you know, over the next week. You know, there's always, you never know what hits these weeks now, but there's always a ridiculous amount of news.
Yeah, there's always something, that's for sure. Well, thanks again for joining us as you always did, and have a great week.
Okay, you too.
All right, that's Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, and you can check out his website, WrestlingObserver.com. He has his own audio shows, the newsletter, and lots of other good stuff. Okay, we're going to take another quick break here. When we come back, Mark and I are going to talk a little AEW, and then, of course, that interview with Sean Spears coming up as well. And you should be giving us a call, because remember, the winner with the best phone call of the night gets a $50 ticket for Pizzaville. So 905-741-2766 and 1-866-729-2562. Give us a shout. Lots more SNME radio coming your way.
If you like Dave Meltzer interview segments, you'll love WrestlingObserver.com. WrestlingObserver.com is your place for the latest pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Subscribers have access to hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter, plus daily podcasts, including a library of over 9,000 shows dating back to 2005. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
If you do think you're so good and you really truly think you're a better wrestler than me, I just can't wrap my brain around the fact that you feel you need one teeny tiny little move in order to beat me. Do you guys get it? Because I don't. Unless, John, you're not man enough to beat me without the paradigm shift. And well, John, if that's the case, maybe you should tell that hot little wife of yours I'm single. Forever young, I want to
be forever young. Ah, yes, forever young. Welcome back. Sunday night's main event here. Dan LaMouth Lavransky and Mark Andrada running the ship tonight. Jay is taking a well-deserved break. We are going to talk a little AEW because the big show is next Saturday night, All Out, one of their biggest shows of the year. They did quite a bit of stuff on Dynamite this week to set it up, but we've actually got some listeners on the line. Matt is calling us from Ottawa, wants to talk a little Payback. Matt, what's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going, Mouth?
Good.
Glad to see you at the helm this week. That's cool. But, yeah, no, the only real thing I want to say about Payback this week is that I'm not cool with Roman Reigns being a heel, honestly, because he's been being booed forever, and then all of a sudden, it's just like, once we start getting behind him, right, he goes through his cancer treatment and all that, and then now we're supposed to boo him. So I don't know. I'm indifferent about it, honestly, and that's how I feel about WWE since pretty much January of last year. I'm super mad about it.
Well, I mean, you're one of the few that I think, Matt, because most people, I think, and thanks so much for the call, I think most people have wanted to see him turn heel.
Yeah, and I mean, he lost a lot of favor. You know, he came back from cancer and was a babyface that people were behind for how long before people mm-hmm. started to turn on him again? And I was like, I can't believe that this guy survives cancer and still can't. Like, that's how bad the writing is on this show, that he's still getting booed. It didn't take long, and he was getting booed again.
And I still think it all goes back to when he was originally forced down everybody's throat when they wanted Daniel Bryan, and Vince pushed Reigns for just so long. I mean, I think even now, who knows what happens? Maybe now that he's a heel, everybody will like him and they'll cheer him. Like, you just can't tell with this guy.
I think that's what's going to happen. I really think that's how it's going to go for him. He is not. John Cena is such a specific guy,
right?
And character, and he's so. They're both charismatic, but John Cena's charismatic in a really specific way. So it ended up working for John Cena. And just because that worked for John Cena doesn't mean it's going to work for Roman Reigns. The same way, you know, beating Daniel Bryan over and over again seemed to only get him over more for a while there.
Yeah.
You can't just do that to, you know, Sami Zayn and everybody else that they keep trying to do it to. It doesn't work for everybody. So I think this heel route is the way to go for Roman Reigns. It worked for Austin. It worked for The Rock. I think that this is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we shall certainly see what happens. We have another caller on the line, too. I know a big-time listener to the show, all the way from Chicago, a great wrestling city. Jake is on the line. Jake, what's on your mind tonight?
Hey, the inmates running the asylum. I love this. Mark in the mouth. How are you all doing?
Good. We're doing very well. Did you check out Payback tonight?
Well, yeah, it was okay. I really like, you know, the Roman turn and all that. But actually, I actually want to talk about, like, the events this week. You know, a real question for you guys, if you don't mind. You know, we've seen in the events of the real world this week about, you know, these major sports leagues, like the NBA and the NFL and Major League Baseball all walking out because of, you know, social justice issues and all that. And do you think... is there ever a case that, what do you think of the case of that kind of strike ever happening in professional wrestling? And probably another question to add on to that. You know, we like to say never in the industry. I'll take this answer off the air. Do we ever see any kind of union whatsoever?
Wow. Well, you know, that second question, that's a question everybody's asked since the dawn of time when it comes to wrestling. You know, Jesse Ventura and guys talked about it in the 80s, could never get it going. I don't know at this stage of the game that there ever will be a union in professional wrestling. I honestly do not see it happening. Mark, what's your take? I just think for so long, I just don't see it happening. I really don't.
Yeah, I think that it could happen if something – I want to be clear, I don't want something terrible to happen. But if something really terrible happened
– Well, wait a minute. Well, Mark, we had a guy drop from the ceiling to his death.
I know, but that was a different time. I mean, if it happened – and listen, that was a – I'm not trying to take anything away from that tragedy. That was a horrible tragedy. I'm just saying the only way I can imagine this happening is if something awful happens and the Screen Actors Guild gets involved. If SAG gets involved, or I'm not sure if there's a separate in the States, if there's a separate union for stunt performers, but if there is, then they might have to get involved as well. I think that's the only time we'll see it. Until then, I don't think that, you know, any performer that's going to try to start a union is just going to get blacklisted and pushed out. I really think the union is going to have to smell something terrible and see an opportunity to increase their membership and get a lot of money. And that's the thing is there's not – I don't know if there are enough wrestlers to increase their membership and to sort of empower them to do that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It would take some major changes. I mean, to me, honestly, at least talking WWE, someone like Vince passing away, like the old yes. guard has to kind of fall away, you know what I mean? Before yes. this kind of stuff happens. I don't know if it's something that Triple H would encourage. It's a very tricky question, and it always has been. As for the other part of what Jake was asking there about performers taking a stand, again, it's a tougher one with WWE where you don't have any kind of backup like that, a players union or anything like that. It's just you against the world kind of thing. And I mean, Vince is always going to show his Martin Luther King vignettes on Martin Luther King Day. And he's always going to talk about the things that he supports, but I don't know if he would be favorable or would be feel very good if performers kind of did like what the NBA and, you know, the NHL players did this year.
Right. And I don't think it's a fair comparison to compare it to sports. I'm right. not saying they should or they shouldn't, but like you can't compare it to the NBA because ultimately this is more like an episode of Saturday Night Live than it is, an NBA game. I know there's athletics involved and I know that it's, you know, an athletic program, but it's not sports. So it sort of changes things. Like that would be, like, could you imagine Saturday Night Live not going on the air because of the political climate? Or could you imagine them stop production on, I don't know, insert sitcom here? You know what I mean? Like, are they going to stop shooting Law and Orders because of this? I don't know.
You know what? If it got bad enough, though, Mark, a show like Saturday Night Live, I could see them doing it. I could see a show like that taking a stance.
That would be huge. That would be huge if that happened.
All right. Well, something to ponder. Definitely. Jake, thank you so much for the call. Let's talk a little bit of AEW here quickly, Mr. Andrada, because we do have the big show coming up. They did a lot of stuff with the Page and the Elite this week. I thought it was absolutely fantastic the way they did the bit with Page preventing the Bucks from moving on in the gauntlet match, but yet him displaying such remorse, and you could tell the look on his face. I just thought they did some really great, and then the later vignette where the Bucks confront him and actually throw him out of the Elite. I thought this was really, really great stuff, and another great part of this story that has built over such a long period of time that I'm super intrigued to see what's going to happen this weekend.
Yeah, me too. They're really setting Adam Page up to just be the guy in the future, hey? And I'm into it.
Yes. Yes, he's definitely going to get a lot out of this. No, but let's talk about this because everybody has their theories, right? I mean, FTR won the gauntlet match, so it's them against Omega and Page for the titles. What happens here? I mean, I suspect FTR wins the belt. Omega and Page, do they fall apart? Who's going to be the heel? Who's going to be the babyface? Because I still think Omega is going to be the heel here.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I'm going to be happy to see Kenny Omega get a singles run. I obviously against Page, but I'm excited to see Kenny Omega on
right.
his own. You know what I
right.
mean? Like,
yes.
I don't know about you, but I've kind of been waiting for that this whole time, and I'm excited that it looks like it's on the horizon now.
Well, good things come to those who wait, Mark, and I think that's been part of AEW's charm, though, is that in some instances they've had to do a couple things here and there that were too quick, like Brody Lee getting a title shot with Moxley. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they've allowed so much other stuff to build. And in fact, now with the Brody Lee win over Cody and a decisive win, the Dark Order is in a really great spot right now compared to months ago when people kind of thought, oh, I don't know about these guys. It seems like a bit of a joke. Now, I think they're in a really, really, really great spot. So it should be interesting to see how stuff plays out. What about MJF and Moxley? Do you pull the trigger on MJF yet, or do you let it build even longer?
I don't know. I mean, this is part of what I love about AEW.
Me too. Me too.
I don't know.
Yeah.
This isn't a clear win. Like, it's not. I don't think MJF should win, and I also don't think he shouldn't. Same with Moxley. I'll say this. I'm really enjoying these promos. What a great way to build this.
The story's so nice and simple, right? It's like, oh, you're a barbarian, you're a brawler, I'm a professional wrestler, I work in the ring, you're a brawler. And just this classic thing of the heel trying to get the babyface's big move banned. I love that. Such an old school kind of storyline.
Yeah. MJF is so good. Moxley's so good. They're both so good. And I'm so excited to see them main event this thing.
Now, the Mimosa Mayhem match, the Orange Cassidy Jericho thing continues. Is this too ridiculous? Does it bother you? Personally, for me, if they have the match, because the match has to ends with pinfall or submission or someone thrown in the vat of mimosa, which is orange juice and wine, for those of you that don't know.
Champagne.
Or champagne, I guess.
Champagne.
And so for me, if they have the win take place as a pin and then someone gets tossed in the juice, I think that's fine. I have no problem with that.
You don't want to see Orange Cassidy win by throwing Chris Jericho into a vat of mimosa and have Chris Jericho splash around like he's drowning?
I mean, in terms of that, I know Jericho is going to pull it off for sure. I want to see that, but I kind of would like to see it after the match.
Fair enough.
Kind of like to see him actually get another pin on Jericho and then toss him in the juice.
Especially because the pin that he did get was a little fuzzy, right? Like,
yes.
that last match that they had, the end there was just, I mean, it was a great match, and then the end happened, and I was like, oh, man, I wish that didn't slip as much as it did.
And we have the Casino Battle Royal, too. And we've got Lance Archer, Brian Cage, Ricky Starks, Darby Allin, Butcher Blade, Pentagon, Ray Phoenix, Eddie Kingston so far. There's going to be 21 guys in this. This one I like because this one has real meaning. It's not just kind of tomfoolery. Winner gets a title shot. What do you think here, Mark? And do you think this is actually on the pay-per-view rather than on the buy-in show? I think this match actually makes the pay-per-view this year.
You think so? So then what's going to be on the buy-in?
I'm not sure.
I guess maybe it's that tag match that we don't know about yet.
It could be. Yeah, it could be that big 8-man tag with the Nightmares.
Oh, yeah.
And Scorpio. Or no, what is it?
It's the Dark Order versus Matt Cardona, Scorpio Sky, and the Natural Nightmares.
Yeah, yeah. So I could see maybe that one in there.
Yeah, good call. Yeah.
Also, how do you think Sheeta versus Thunder Rosa plays out? Because, you know, Thunder Rosa from a different organization. I'm totally stoked for this match because I know
too.
The two of them are going to have a great match. I really like Thunder Rosa.
But, me too. I'm so excited about this match.
Yeah, me exactly. What do you think, though? I mean, I honestly think Sheeta should probably keep it to build her up a bit more.
Well, I'm going to be biased because... Thunder Rosa is my favorite female wrestler.
Oh, okay.
And I love the makeup. I think she's an incredible performer. I love her on the mic, everything, top to bottom. I'm a huge Thunder Rosa fan, so I want Thunder Rosa to win.
So what happens if she wins it then? Because does she become a regular fixture or...
Like, I think
you know, it's not really clear whether it. I don't get the impression she's part of the roster, or they're not making that clear, anyways.
Yeah, maybe she sort of does that gimmick where she kidnaps the belt, right? And she is the outsider that has taken the AEW Women's title. I don't think NWA's really doing anything right now, are
True.
They? Are they? They're not filming. They're kind of shut down because of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. I think they're doing one kind of little YouTube-y thing, but that's. That's about it. You're right. They stopped doing NWA Powers right away. And, I mean, so, look, we saw Wade Barrett on NXT, and he's also going to be doing the show next week, he said. So that's going on. The main thing for me seeing Thunder Rosa, besides having, I know she'll have a great match with Sheeta, is the tease of do you bring in Nick Aldis and set him up with Cody since there's already history there. And
yeah.
Cody's dropped the title now.
I wonder. I wonder what would happen there. I feel like if there's any guy, and this is, I'm not trying to slight him at all, but if there's any guy I don't want to see show up is him, because he is the NWA champion, and leave him as the special attraction, the champion for NWA. So when NWA comes back, he's the guy that I've missed. You know what I mean?
Interesting. All right. Well, I think that's pretty well all the matches that we know about so far. I also just make a quick pick. Who do you think for the Battle Royal to get the title shot?
That's a tough go. I feel like the story there is going to be Lance Archer versus Brian Cage, right? That seems like that's what they're building towards.
Right.
So I feel like it's not going to be either of those guys.
Okay.
Maybe Darby Allin?
Right. This is interesting because obviously these guys know how to use a battle royal to get other angles started. So you're right. I think Lance Archer and Brian Cage, maybe even Starks, the three of those guys are kind of all involved together. Maybe all take each other out. I don't think they're going to give it, you know, a shot to Pentagon or Rey Fénix or Butcher or Blade. So that really doesn't leave a lot, right? At the moment, yeah, it just leaves Darby Allin and Eddie Kingston.
Oh, Jeremy is saying that he thinks it's going to be Wardlow so that it doesn't spoil the main event. That would be an interesting angle straight away.
Interesting. And yeah, it could be. It could work that way. And that creates intrigue even before we have the actual match. So not a bad pick, Jeremy. Not a bad pick. Glad to see you're paying attention. okay, we'll take another quick break here, and then we'll come back, and we're going to hear John, since coming off the AEW talk, we're going to hear Jay's interview with Sean Spears. So stay tuned. More of Sunday night's main event is coming your way.
Take your hot sauce game to the next level with Flavor Lust. Flavor Lust hot sauce is made with a complex base of mulled vinegar, smoked paprika, chipotle, and garlic, enhanced by scorpion peppers, piri piri, and green Szechuan peppercorns, balanced out with the sweetness of honey and Asian plum to provide a bold level of heat that never burns or overpowers your food. Plus, it comes in a sexy black bottle, making it the perfect gift for any hot sauce lover. Get your bottle today. Search Flavor Lust on Amazon.
Wait a minute. Chair shot right to the side of the head of Cody, who couldn't even get his hand up.
All right, welcome back to the program here. Sunday night's main event, TSN 1150. Dan the Moth Laransky here with you and Mark Andrada. And at this time, we want to go to our interview with Sean Spears. That was a clip there from back when he first came into the promotion in AEW and had the feud with Cody. He really hasn't had much. It's kind of been stop-start for him since the whole thing with Cody. There were the tease of him being in a tag. Tully Blanchard was trying to put together. Now that Tully's with FTR, that's kind of been left behind. But perhaps we will see him as part of the FTR-Tully faction. Well, Jason Agnew had a chance to sit down to talk to Mr. Spears about this and many other things. So let's go to that interview right now. Jason Agnew and Sean Spears.
Let's go back to when, you know, you were in WWE. You were clearly not necessarily happy with the way you were being utilized there and asked for your release on your birthday. Was that pre-planned on your part, or was that just an epiphany you had that day and decided to go, hey, I'm going to do this?
No, that was about... I didn't know if it was going to happen exactly on that day, probably about a month out. I'd probably more towards that specific day, but it was that thought process was about 6 months long. And I just kind of had to take that time to really ask myself certain questions. I didn't tell anybody. So I didn't, my wife was the only person that knew that I was contemplating it, but I didn't tell my mother or sisters or brothers or any family members or any other wrestling friends because I didn't want any influence. That decision had to be mine and mine alone. But no, it was probably about a 6 month process, but about, you know, 3 to 4 weeks out, I decided on that day, if I still woke up feeling the same way, I was going to make the call then.
Now, I mean, you mentioned you did tell your wife there with Peyton being in WWE, there had to be concern on your part with WWE booking and what the ramifications of you putting this out and potentially leaving would have for her.
I mean, there might've been a quick thought that crossed our minds, but at the end of the day, you know, if someone is going to be punished for someone else making an adult decision, I mean, it's laughable a little bit because we're all in an adult world, but she's a professional through and through. And what mattered most to her was my happiness. It didn't exactly matter about how I was being booked or how she was being booked or potentially not being booked moving forward. It mattered most how I was when I came home and how we were in our private life. And if I wasn't just happy in my everyday private life, then I wasn't going to be able to make her happy in our everyday private life. It was going to kind of affect everything that we decided to do moving forward with our lives. So that was the first and foremost thing. Anything you know, career-wise was essentially secondary. But I had her full support in whatever decision I decided to make, regardless of whatever ramifications would come from it.
I just love the fact you depended on WWE to make a very adult decision, which I think we both know that that's not always the case from what we've seen with other guys. But it worked out, and she's doing great, and you're obviously doing great. And, you know, going to AEW, at the time in WWE, you were branded the Perfect 10. What were your goals walking in? Was it to outright shed the former character?
No. I thought it was a great opportunity to have a change of pace, to start fresh, so to speak. I had a great deal of success with the Perfect 10 character. I enjoyed that character immensely, and I enjoyed the interactions with the audience with that character. The move to AEW simply was to live out the remaining years of my in-ring career the way I wanted to. You know, every week that I go to AEW, I'm performing in one way, shape, or form. I'm either in a match, I'm on camera, I'm on commentary, I'm doing something on the talent side of things that may not be the case if I was working elsewhere. So it boiled down to wanting to enjoy the last few in-ring years that I have left before I wrap everything up. So that was the main purpose in leaving WWE, and that's what AEW provided.
So how did the pairing with Tully Blanchard come about? Because this has obviously got to be a real kick for you working with someone like Tully.
Oh, unreal. And I get asked that a lot, and I still have a hard time putting it into words. The guy's a legend. The guy is, you know, Hall of Famer. You can give him a million accolades, and he lives up to them all. Something I never saw coming, of course. You know, when you leave a place that you've always wanted to work since you were a kid, there's a lot of questions that pop into your mind, a lot of doubts here and there. But one of the first things that came, you know, the opportunity that popped up was to work with Tully. Mm-hmm. And of course, I jumped over it, not knowing exactly where we were going. I knew that I was, you know, coming in combating with Cody, you know, in the history with him and the Four Horsemen and his father and, you know, that full circle kind of thing. I just thought it was a perfect story. I thought it gave us a lot of opportunity to branch off if possible, but it was a no-brainer working with Tully, and clearly the pairing has worked. We've been kind of working on things under the radar, slowly but surely. But as you can probably tell, things are starting to form slowly but surely.
Okay. I can see what you're saying. And believe me, I'm going to ask you about that. After the pairing with Tully though, you know, you did the Cody feud and it was great. I mean, there was, I could watch you and see, you know, a reignited passion in your work, and you and Cody have known each other for so long. So of course you're going to be great in the ring together. What a great program. Coming off that, though, there was a bit of a stutter step because you were with Tully and you were looking for a tag team partner. Now, this angle never really came to a conclusion. And I'm kind of curious, when it was put in place, was there someone where there was an end game, where you had someone in mind at the end and it was progressing towards that but got cut off?
So the search for a tag team partner was legitimate. There was actually submissions made, and I think we put out a little montage of a first group of applicants and things like that. That was legit. And as you can tell from even Cody's TNT Championship open challenge, that there's been a few people that have signed contracts given their performances based off those open challenges. So I wholeheartedly believed that somebody at some point in time that was submitting applications to be a tag team partner for myself and Tully would have been signed. I have no doubt about that. The only thing is that the pandemic hit, things kind of shut down, and Tully was kind of set in place in Texas for about 2 months. During those 2 months, I started having too much fun at work and started kind of goofing off a little bit and kind of taking my eye off the prize, or at least the goals that we had set, Tully and I, when we first got together. So when he came back after that match I had with Dustin at Double or Nothing, he kind of put a stop to everything. He said, the search is done. There's no tag partner, not until you can kind of get your stuff together, so to speak. And he put a stop to the search. He put a stop to everything that we were doing moving forward and kind of, you know, realigned my vision, so to speak.
So you guys then proceeded forward to have the black glove presented to you, which is something that harkens back to Ted DiBiase, Barry Windham. Whose idea was it to give you this gimmick?
So it was Tully that presented it to me. In the beginning, I was a little apprehensive, not because of what Tully was offering me, but because, like you said, it's a throwback. Mm-hmm. 56 years. And the audience today, you know, that generation may not be familiar with the black glove, and a lot of young kids don't want to take the time to dig and do their homework about it. But he felt that it was time, as I said, after coming off of Double or Nothing, which is about as low as we could possibly get, he thought it was time to introduce something that would make me stand out amongst the sea of plenty of wrestlers. In AEW, there's a great deal of talent, but there's not a lot of landscape. So, you know, real estate is kind of limited. Now, how can we stand out? How can we make an impact and kind of honor some of those that have come before us? Obviously, a horseman presenting a black glove is something quite significant in the history of professional wrestling. So the challenge for me is to make something that is 50, 60 years old prominent again, or at least interesting again, and, you know, can possibly make a younger generation go, all right, this is kind of neat. Where does this come from? Who did this first? Because, you know, in wrestling, there's not many firsts anymore. Everything has been done by somebody somewhere. So the challenge now is to kind of bring that to the forefront of AEW. So that's where we're at right now. But it was Tully that presented it, and it's working. If you've noticed my record, it's working.
So, sure. I mean, Tully presents it, but obviously we've seen Cody and we've seen Tony Khan be big fans of WCW in the 80s. And we've seen AEW take a lot of pieces of nostalgia from WCW from the 80s and use them successfully. What do you think the difference is in between what you guys do in AEW with using nostalgia versus what WWE does, hearkening back to the Attitude Era and being criticized for?
I think that in today's wrestling world, you're not going to be able to make anybody happy. And I mean that in terms of the audience. There is no, it's really tough to please them because everybody's a critic, especially on social media. I think for what we do, what's old is new works. I am a firm believer in that. I've always been a firm believer in that. In terms of what the other company's doing, I can't really comment because I don't really know. I focus on what we do, and more importantly, I focus on what myself and Tully can do.
Okay, so all kayfabe aside, looking at the environment that you were in the past and where you are now, how much say do you have in your character work?
So, I'm curious to ask you, what do you mean kayfabe aside? I'm curious to get this point of view from you.
There's been a lot of you telling me that you had Tully present you with the glove, and I was hoping to know more of the origin of the storyline, whether it was Tony's idea or Cody's idea or whose idea, or if it was your idea and you hearken back as opposed
Everything has to be signed off on, you know that.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Ideas can be pitched, but
I'm curious. Listen, if it was your idea, I'd love to hear about it because I mean, if it was you looking back at Barry Windham, I'd like to know that you brought that to the table and they said, hey, this is a great idea. Cause we do like to pull little nuggets.
Yes. Well, no, I wish I could tell you that. I talked to Barry, but it was not my idea. But anything that does go on AEW programming does have to be signed off on by the boss. So if the boss liked it, then it's a good idea and it's moving forward.
And we can continue to see pulling aspects. And you mentioned already in the interview that we can see things starting to roll. And I think things really came into play on the last episode of Dynamite when you came out and Tully was already out there in the ring with Arn. And all of a sudden, there does seem to be of a link to FTR. I mean, does it look like we're going down to a horseman-style faction, perhaps? Do you foresee a link between you and FTR coming about?
Myself and FTR are good friends. We've known each other for many years, worked together in countless places, and we believe in the same thing. We have the same mentality to be the very tippity top of the mountain, be the pinnacle of this industry, and we believe in the same style of pro wrestling. Obviously, they have built their style off of what Arn and Tully have done for years. I mean, you know this already. Everything I'm saying, you've already seen yourself. Mm-hmm. We've had our conversations. We, again, believe in the same thing, but we also know that timing is everything. So to say that there is going to be a horseman type action, there is no duplicating a faction of that magnitude. I don't care who you ask. There's no duplicating one of the greatest, arguably the greatest faction of all time. But the idea on me having a few pals, I don't think that's lost on me. I don't think that's lost on anybody.
Well, I mean, I've heard a lot of sentiment of no flips, just fists. And if there's a hangman by your side as well and a horseman in your corner, this seems pretty promising for 2021.
I don't know. I'm not too big a hangman fan. Definitely a horseman in my corner. And those FTR guys are all right. But in terms of a hangman, he's an elite guy, isn't he?
We'll find out, I think, in the next few months. But Ronnie/Sean, thank you very much for your time, man. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Okay, there you have it, Jason's conversation with Sean Spears.
He was trying to get some answers out of him, and he was not giving them up.
Wow, I can't believe it in 2020, honestly, and especially with a promotion like AEW. I might kind of expect that out of a WWE guy, but, man, that's surprising that someone from AEW. But there you go. Jay tried his best. And there were lots of good stuff in there. And, in fact, there is an uncut 25-minute version of the interview. And that will be up on the Patreon noon on Monday. So if you have a chance or you'd like to hear more from the kayfabe-loving Sean Spears there, perhaps you might want to check out the long version of the interview. Right here on the program, though, we're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to come back, wrap up some odds and ends, read a bit of your feedback, and send it off for another week. So stay tuned. One more segment coming up here on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Bartender Dave here to let all of my bearded brethren know that we are bringing the High Street Beard Care products to North America. From the darkest reaches of South Africa comes the finest beard oils and grooming products known to man. The highstreetbeardoil.ca. To us, beards are not a trend. They are a way of life. We have 4 beard oil flavors, spicy, woody, citrus, and earthy. A revolutionary beard jelly that'll leave your beard silky smooth and ridiculously attractive. Beard fertilizers that'll help you grow the biggest and most beautiful beard you can imagine. Also beard paste, beard butter, and stash wax. All available at thehighstreetbeardoil.ca. Join us on the high street and spoil your mane.
4 men who can claim to be the greatest ever in this industry. We'll compete in a 4-way match to decide the new NXT champion. But it's not going to be easy. Because for the first time in history, the NXT championship will be decided in a 4-way 60-minute Iron Man match.
Oh, don't fade it down so quick, man. It's Black Sabbath. Come on, man.
Amazing.
I was just going to sit there and enjoy the tune for a little bit.
My my neighbor has a dog walking company called Black Labbeth, and I just love it.
That is pretty cool. Yeah. That's very cool. So he should attach collars with little speakers and just blare Black Sabbath whenever he walks one of the dogs.
I bet she would love that.
That would be awesome. Sunday night's main event. Welcome back to the program here. We're just going to wrap things up. We just heard Mr. Mark Andrade. That was the clip from NXT this week to set up the big 4-way to replace the championship now that Karrion Kross had to throw in the towel. We got Gargano and Ciampa, of course. We have Finn Balor and we have Adam Cole. What do you think here? And a 60-minute Iron Man match. What do you think?
I think we've got 4 heels going in a 4-way for the championship.
Which is going to make it somewhat interesting, yeah.
That'll be interesting. Listen, I am a big fan of Finn Balor. I thought Finn Balor should have gotten this championship when Keith Lee did, frankly. That was the move I would have made. I would have made Finn Balor the first double champion, and I would have had him hang on to both belts for a little while. And then lose them one at a time. you know, instead of just Keith Lee giving one away and then immediately losing the other one.
Oh yeah, no, the way that they handled that with Keith Lee was not good at all.
Yeah.
Just looking at the four names, honestly, I can't see it going to anybody but Adam Cole.
Really? You're just going to put it right back on Adam Cole, hey?
Well, I just think, I mean, you're going to go back to Gargano or Ciampa? Like, I can't see them going back to those guys. And I don't see them putting it on Finn Balor either.
Yeah, I don't know if this is the way I wanted to see Finn Balor get that belt. But I did want to see him hold the belt, and I wanted him to sort of be the guy for a while. It made sense to me. He was coming down from the coming down. I don't like saying it that way. I got to stop. He was coming from Raw or SmackDown. And coming to NXT, I thought that he should have a championship.
Yeah.
If not the heavyweight championship, then the North American, perhaps? But,
well,
I don't know.
He should have some. I mean, he got screwed out of the best angle they could have ever done when he won the first Universal title, got hurt right away, and had to go off, and they never allowed him to come back and really have his revenge or his chance to get the title back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't complain if Balor wins it, but I honestly think they're going to do it with Cole and push the guy winning the belt twice.
Yeah, I could see that. That makes sense.
All right. Well, also, let's get into a couple of pieces of feedback here. Mark, you went through the thread and picked out a couple.
Yeah, I got a couple here. Tommy Lang says, did WWE start booking the retribution angle before they knew Roman was coming back? Because it seems like we've been put on the back burner for the last couple of weeks. Yeah, we talked about that with Dave. What do you think? Like, do you think anything's going to happen with Retribution at all?
Well, I just find it really weird that it was so strong on Raw and then nothing on SmackDown. And SmackDown has really been the show where they've really been pushing it. And then nothing on tonight's pay-per-view. Personally, myself, I haven't been a big fan of it, so I don't really care if it just disappears. That happens all the time. But I think we need a bit of progression here. We've had enough of, okay, they're running in, they're attacking people, the company seems to know they're there. Isn't it time that Retribution said something or something was that? We need to take it to the next level, because if you don't move it on, it's just going to get boring.
Yeah, for sure. They've been spinning their wheels on this for a while. I mean, I guess if you want to think that bringing a chainsaw to the ring is elevating something, they elevated it that one week, and then it kind of went back down to sort of just noise, noise.
It's a tough one, man. Like, how do you, again, to keep, I know it's wrestling, but you want a tad of believability. How do they get in the building? How do they control the lights? Or maybe these the guys that always sit in the back and mess with the lights when they needed to be messed with? I don't know. But I would like a little bit of explanation or a promo or something from someone to find out what exactly is going on here.
Yeah, we have Randy Charpentier says that the pay-per-view was better than expected. He really liked Ray and Dominic. Definitely was match of the night for him. And there were a couple of other matches that were good. He says it was the best pay-per-view in months. There was no Underground, no Retribution. Why do they do that? He doesn't seem to have a problem with it. Do you think we're ever going to see Raw Underground get a spot on a pay-per-view or a pay-per-view of its own? Could you imagine?
Again, I feel the same about Raw Underground as I do as Retribution. It needs to progress. It's not progressing. In fact, I thought this week's segments on Raw were absolutely useless. And they didn't even make sense continuity-wise, because we saw Ivor leave with what's her name? And then he's there at the Underground fighting. I'm like, I don't like it. I think it looks stupid. Of course, it involves Shane McMahon, so I instantly don't like it. And I'm just tired of it. And I think it's kind of stupid. And unless it's going to go somewhere, then no, it's not going to end up on a pay-per-view.
Yeah, it really hasn't. There's just been nothing to it. Hey, it's just a different look. I thought, when they started this, I thought it was going to be the whole third hour. And it would have its own storyline and its own thing, and it just hasn't. You know what?
It's a toss-away segment that they stick in the show when they got an empty spot.
That sucks.
Like, that's it. Like, it doesn't get any prominence. You don't really hear about it all. The lead-on off the top, they just say, oh, Raw Underground tonight. And, you know it's bad when guys, like, they're just throwing guys like Dolph Ziggler in there, like, you know, poor guy. Yes, goes through all this thing with McIntyre, a bit of prominence, then loses, and now he's stuck in this like kind of lame action. I don't know. Again, unless it moves forward or something really intriguing happens, I'm not digging it.
Yeah. It'd be different if it was, you know, helping a character out like Dolph Ziggler, if it was putting a fresh coat of paint on somebody.
And that's it. And they had that one guy there with Shane a couple of times that it looked like they were going to maybe use it to push him. But then I don't even think he was on it this week.
Yeah, he wasn't even around.
So I don't know. It's I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I'm not too cool with that. But one thing that I am very cool with is giving away a Pizzaville $50 gift card to the best call of the night. Yep. Do you want to announce it, Mark, or should I?
Well, I think since you were the one who agreed with him 100%, you should announce it.
It's a first, ladies and gentlemen. I think Hanzi gets to win tonight. He deserves it. I mean, he calls the show all the time. He's a huge wrestling fan, and we all know pizza and wrestling go together so well. So, Hanzi, you get the $50 gift card from Pizzaville for this week. There you go. That's awesome. Good deed of the week, Mark.
I like Hanzi. I'm always happy when he calls. I love hearing him.
All right. Well, that's it for us for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Check out our Facebook page. It's SNME Radio. And, of course, check out the Patreon. If you want more stuff, you get Mark doing shows with Jay with the Midweek Markout. You got me doing the AEW podcast with Joe. You get my CIUT music show. You get all kinds of great stuff on there. So check it out, and Jay will be back again next week. Mark, thank you so much for joining in.
What a great time. Thank you so much for having me. I had the best night.
Yeah, and we actually had a show that wasn't half bad. We didn't sit here and just cry like babies for the whole show. So that's always a positive. So, again, thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back again next week. So don't you dare miss it, brother.
Thanks for finding Sunday night's main event right here on TSN Radio. If you ever can't tune into the show live or miss a part or just want to hear it again, the shows are available at patreon.com/SNME Radio. And it's only $1 a show. Plus, you get access to all of our patron exclusive podcasts, which include NXT Takeover review shows. Just visit patreon.com/SNME Radio. It's only $1 a show, and we appreciate the support.